Hey folks, just to let you know, we have a content warning for the upcoming episode. We talk about sex work, we talk about bodies and body shaming, we talk about stripping, we use all kinds of language in here, so if any of those things are upsetting to you, it's totally okay. Just note there is a content warning for this whole episode on those subjects.
Hi there. Welcome to You Love to See It, FanBite's movie review podcast / delightful neighborhood video store. Every week, our friendly staff watches a movie and decides if it is worthy of being displayed in our distinguished staff picks shelf, if it's just good enough to hang in the totally acceptable middle aisle, or if it is going straight to the dumpster out back. And by that we mean a waste-to-energy incineration recycling plant, of course. We are not monsters. This is an eco-friendly joint. Working the counter today, we have yours truly, Fernanda, that's offensive to women, and Beavers Prates, and my usual partner in crime. And by crime, I mean my partner in talking movies and running this totally legal and above board video rental business. That's Danielle, money can't buy it, Riondu. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm excited to start another workday for us.
Yeah. I'm just cleaning the counter. Somebody spilled so much popcorn, like really crappy, like expired 10 years ago popcorn. So I'm just trying to keep it clean over here. You know, again, since we are totally legal above board video rental above business board. And, you know, yeah.
Totally conforming with the sanitary health laws and stuff.
Yeah, it can't smell too much like rotten popcorn, right?
Some rotten popcorn. It's totally
just
fine.
Just a
and acceptable.
Little, you know?
Yeah, just so it's to you know, set the scene. But yes, and this month, I'm very excited because we are taking a look at Janksgiving movies. And what is that exactly? I'm glad you asked. Janksgiving is a Latin expression that we may or may not have literally just invented. That means, well, you have probably deduced already. Possibly disheveled, potentially awkward, certainly flawed, often malign movies that we ultimately believed meant well and deserved to get a second look from us. And this week, we are watching 1996's Striptease.
Erin Grant is desperate. And desperate times call for desperate measures.
Cream corn wrestling.
No chance that I am going to roll around naked in creamed corn with a bunch of drunken yahoos trying to stick niblets up my hoo-ha.
Erin has many interesting men in her life. Oh. An ex-husband.
What's Mercedes is that?
Some orthodontist from Tampa.
God, Daryl, what would Mama say?
She'd say nice fucking car.
Ow!
A United States congressman.
You must be...
Convac Dildo.
This nut is a congressman?
Congressman Dildo.
Why are you all shiny?
It's Vaseline.
I can feel it squishing between my toes.
An enterprising lawyer.
You know, my neck really feels better, Uncle Al.
Oh, yeah? How's it feel now?
And a most unusual bouncer.
You follow politics, Mr. Chat?
Do I look like I follow politics?
Castle Rock Entertainment presents a story about the bodies that move.
You jump here in a second, that piece of shit.
And the ones that don't. Demi Moore.
I'm Malcolm Moldowski, Congressman Dobek's right hand.
You must be a very busy man.
Striptease.
You're Mrs. Grant?
No, I'm Barbara Bush.
Who is he?
George Bush.
So before we move on, for those of you who are unfamiliar with this tale of several things, I shall read you a short synopsis that I believe really captures the essence of the film. When a deeply incompetent judge inexplicably gives Erin Randall's deadbeat ex-husband full custody of their daughter, she finds herself working at a strip club in order to raise money to appeal the, again, truly baffling legal decision. Things get a lot more complicated, however, after a sleazy and literally slippery congressman starts obsessing over Erin. A bunch of guys die. A police officer gets involved. There's a python in there somewhere, and a cockroach dipped in yogurt. With Demi Moore in the lead role of Erin, Striptease is a tale of motherhood, of sorority, of resilience, of boobs, of female empowerment, and most importantly, of Burt Reynolds being slathered in Vaseline. I feel like that pretty much captures it. Don't you think, Danielle?
I think. I just had to stifle a cackling laugh right there. I'm not going to lie, because you've just captured the essence of this, like, deeply goofy but good-hearted movie. I mean, again, deeply, deeply goofy, good-hearted movie about boobs and female empowerment and also terrible legal decisions. There's just so much.
And several other things that just... It's kind of like in that episode of Friends when Joey makes like a beef trifle and it has like all the ingredients and like, not Joey, Rachel, sorry. And it's got like cream and like beef in the middle and it's not supposed to work, but it does. I feel
but
like that's kind of...
somehow comes together. Yeah, this is a movie that it's again, on paper, you wouldn't think that it has the heart of gold that it does, but it kind of does and it redeems itself, I think. It stumbles
in a few ways.
It stumbles, but also tends to redeem itself in the end. So.
Since we're already talking a little bit about that, like let's get into our setting the scene stage of this. This part is spoiler free, so if you haven't watched the movie yet, I did spoil the part about Burt Reynolds being slathered in Vaseline, but I feel like this is just a calling card. For the movie, really. If you haven't watched it yet, this part is safe. And it's when we talk a little bit about, you know, our experiences with the film, kind of give you some background on it and how it actually came to appear here in our beautiful show/video rental store. Let's start with you, Danielle. What's your history with Striptease?
So I have zero history until yesterday. With Striptease. Okay. I mean, other than being around, this is 96, around 12 when it came out and being aware of the movie being out and aware of the way that, like, you know, terrible people in my life talked about women, basically, and being, like, just really kind of disparaging about the movie that, like, oh, this, you know, crappy movie came out and about, you know, X, Y, and Z using not nice language. So, like, really, I just had, like, that sense as, like, a preteen on the verge of becoming a teen. Now, the other aspect here is just, you know, I guess somebody's history with Demi Moore, which, you know, I don't have a history with Demi Moore. It's not like I've dated her. I'm not trying to
say that. I would love to get that story. Like, actually, I have a personal history with Demi Moore.
Right. Like. Exactly. I do not, to be clear. But
unfortunately for all of us.
Unfortunately, yeah. Unfortunately for me, but, you know, I've always liked her, respected her, thought she's incredibly talented. I know she obviously was, you know, got her start in modeling and is obviously like one of the most attractive people on the planet, as many obviously actors and actresses are. But yeah, just generally have always liked her and, you know, liked her talent and seeing her in the roles that she has been in. So that's it, really. Just kind of a vague sense of, you know, not the best message in my life about this movie and otherwise liking Demi Moore.
You probably had sort of, because it kind of stayed, I think, in the discourse as a terrible movie trademark.
Like, terrible kind of movie that's how it became. That Demi Moore was paid too much to be in to show her boob. Oh, again, yes. These are like disparaging remarks people made at the time. Yeah. And like, really some trash fucking discourse, as we'll get into, I'm sure, a little bit. But yeah, this movie has a terrible reputation that is not really deserved. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. This movie is a lot better than that kind of discourse would have you think.
Yeah, and it was kind of the same for me. I think I actually have a very specific recollection of here's the thing. In Brazil, we have this show on Sundays called Fantástico, which is kind of like our 60 Minutes, but I guess not as... It's more of a variety thing. But yeah, it's like a big news roundup type of show, and it's huge. It's a classic. And when you're a kid, like my age, because I was born in 89, you sort of grew up watching Fantástico on Sundays. And my recollection of it was when the movie was about to come out, so I was like seven or something, they did this whole story on Demi Moore preparing for the role. And like, I don't even know if it was good, what it was based on, but in my mind, I just remember it being like a thing. Like, it was a very big thing that this very big actress was doing this very big movie. And like you said, it really became part of the discourse. And as I was researching it for the show, like, kind of people talk about it as the sort of downslide of Demi Moore's career. Because she was paid $12.5 million for the movie, which at the time broke a record that was later broken by Meg Ryan in 2000. Sure. And it was kind of this idea, like you said, oh, she's getting paid way too much money for this. And I'm like, dude, this is a huge-ass star who is agreeing to be on a movie where she's basically almost entirely naked the entire time, that will demand a lot of her physically, of course, but that she's like really putting herself out there in a very specific way. And for a thing that will obviously make lots of money, because at that point, who wouldn't want to see freaking Demi Moore naked? Right. Of course you can ask for a lot of money. Get that bad girl.
Like, right. Exactly.
So that was kind of it too. And like you said, a lot of those same harmful messages. And we'll get to it as we discuss the movie more, because it's a movie that really is about a stripper that I feel personally slips at some points, but and not just when Burt Reynolds is covered in Vaseline.
there are slips, I will insist on this, figurative and literal in this movie, for sure.
But also, like, I feel like in other moments, it paints a very interesting different like picture, I think, than what I was expecting of the whole scene. But yeah, I guess with that, we can move on to the part where we will have spoilers. So if you want to like stop, watch the movie, come back, hopefully you can still enjoy it even if you haven't watched it. Though I will say, it's your freaking loss. Go watch it.
Yeah, you should probably watch it. Honestly, I think you should watch it.
Stick around as we, pardon the pun, strip it down for you in the next few minutes. I guess one of the things I really wanted to discuss is the characters.
Yeah.
Because they're very over the top. But I fell in love with quite a few of them. The main being the like the security guy, Chad, who's played by Ving Rhames, who's absolutely hilarious. He has like the best one-liners. He has a little freaking monkey. He has this whole plan about putting a cockroach in a yogurt. And then he says like he's doing that because he's a dreamer and he wants to make more. Like, it's a... He truly is, to me, the highlight of the movie. He just makes me laugh every time. He really does have the best one-liners, and he delivers them in that like really deadpan kind of way. Then like the strippers, I feel like they're all really funny in their own. They all have their own little shticks. Dancers. Burt Reynolds as the rich creep who sniffs Aaron's underwear while slathered head to toe in Vaseline. Only to proceed to go on stage and preach about family values. That's amazing. And even the asshole husband, who's actually T-1000, Robert Patrick.
I said this before recording, but I legitimately did not recognize him until I saw this in your show notes, that's Robert Patrick. Because he's playing this, like, absolute cartoon character of, like, the shittiest lowlife husband ever. Like, the guy fucking uses his adorable daughter to steal wheelchairs. Like, that's his that's his career.
And when he goes to Burt Reynolds, I steal wheelchairs. We have a lot in common. It's amazing.
As a conservative senator, like a Republican senator who is like, just, I mean, all right. So here's a thing that definitely comes up, and it comes up for these characters. But like, this movie is both, has some views on sex and sexuality that are like both, sometimes you want to applaud, sometimes you don't want to applaud, at least for me personally, of like, okay, so he's kind of like this, you know, quote unquote, like pervert senator. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't want to kink shame this man, you know, you can do whatever you want, dude. You like Vaseline? Fucking go with God. Enjoy yourself. You know, you want to sniff panties as long as it's a consensual thing. Please enjoy yourself. Like, as long as it's consensual. I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, he actually sucks. I just don't want to say that kink shaming like is good.
You're right.
However, he's also this conservative piece of shit. Who, like, he's literally covered in Vaseline and sniffing the panties and then goes out and talks about, I love family values. And it's like, that's such a perfect cut and like a perfect, you know, indictment of who this asshole is and who it's making fun of. Like, this is making fun of horrible conservatives who have horrible opinions about human sexuality, even though as often as not, they will have kinks and they will have preferences that everyone can have and shouldn't be shamed. So it's, yeah, it's one of those.
And he was married too. So he's pursuing Aaron the entire movie while being married.
Yeah. And he's just like, my wife doesn't even like me. And it's just like, all right, dude. Like, I mean, again, if this was consensual and your wife was fine with this, that'd be fine. However, I don't think they have that kind of relationship.
Yeah, we don't know. Maybe that would be an interesting spinoff. The congressman and the wife patching things up, going to couples counseling. Trying to figure out what that whole thing was about.
Honestly, that would be a great follow-up. And he becomes, like, kink positive and, like, begins to accept himself for who he really is and, like, understands consent and, like, learns all these things and then rallies against the horrible family values shit. Like, see? Listen.
Missed opportunity. While people are out there trashing striptease, for reasons I cannot fully understand to this day, they could have been out there making this beautiful sequel.
Right?
That's unfortunate.
Listen.
One little tidbit yeah. that I thought was really interesting when we're talking about Robert Patrick. He said that he had a little crush on Demi Moore when he was shooting. And then he said it was fun to be her ex-husband, Darrow Grant. What an idiot. Oh my God, what a moron. Playing to my strong suits as a white trash Southern boy. Oh. A redneck. Laughs, says, that's pretty good. I like this word association stuff, the physical comedy. It's really, it's a whole thing. Like, I love that he had a little crush on her and that he was, he understood how trash Darrow Grant was. And it ended up making it funny, right? Because it's serious. This guy's, by all standards, a fucking abusive asshole.
Yeah, he's a real piece of shit. Like, the setup is, it's a little hard to swallow because it's so insane. Like, the fact that this woman who is, like, I mean, she's presented as like, okay, she worked in the FBI and like, you know, had this great job and married this absolute piece of shit. And they had a beautiful little kid. And then this judge who just loves football is like, oh, he's the best football player. I don't even remember what position, but it's fine. He's the best football player and he gets full custody. And that's why she
was insane.
It's like,
that scene is like deranged.
What? Which is, again, there's a few. This movie is a comedy, and I think it's fun for it to, like, do this, because it is, again, the point gets confused many times throughout the movie, but it is trying to make the point that life is very fucking unfair for women. Like, I think that's the point this movie is making, that, like, society actually fucking sucks, that for one to be an exotic dancer, or however you want to call it, is honest work. It's fucking fine for somebody to do that. There's no need to be shamed about that. And, like, the fact that people just keep mistreating her and misunderstanding her is on them. They are the dumbasses. She is awesome. Like, that's, I think, the thesis of the movie, basically. Mm-hmm. Even though, again, the movie does undercut itself often for, like, a cheap joke. And that's, like, that's for me, that's the only problem with this movie. Like,
I get that.
Seriously, I love this movie. Like, I really enjoyed it. I thought I'd be much more down on it, but I really liked it, and I think it's a really good point, and I think it mostly makes the point well. It's just that every now and then it's like, you know, it'd be funny, ha ha, and it's like, you know, you're kind of like, movie, you were doing so well. It's like 1996. I understand 1996 was a different, slightly different time, but yeah, it I also definitely do also want to go back to Shed because I love him so much and I want him to be more movies. Like, oh, I want to see what he does every day of his life because you get a sense of it, right? You get a sense because he has to do all these like batshit things. Like this guy, again, he has the scheme that you mentioned about putting the cockroach in the yogurt, which was supposed to be like a lawsuit scheme. But unfortunately, the secretary of, eats, you know, the lawyer cockroach, eats the cockroach and she just makes like the face, like the, it's like the kombucha girl face. Like,
yeah.
The, like, she's doing the like, ew, and then like she does the
weirded out by the crunch. And it's such a good little tidbit. It really has no place in the rest of the movie, but it's just funny.
Yeah, exactly. But that one really works. He has to go get a snake late at night. He claims he has like a repetitive,
not just any snake, like a fucking python.
Giant python.
And the owner of the strip bar, which is called the Eager Beaver. Just amazing. And he has a guy that can fix him up with a snake in the middle of and then he says, this is why I don't like this business anymore. It doesn't have, like, he used to be all heart.
Yeah, it's really, he is wonderful. He's like a very underrated presence in this movie because he just has such great lines. Like he has this, oh, there's no humanity in it. And he also has this line about like, oh, you know, like I can't have an erection like from working so many years in this club. And he's like, you know what does it for me? Porpoises.
SeaWorld.
And then Shad, it's like this great moment between him and Shad. And Shad's just like, why the fuck did you tell me that? And he's like, I don't know. It's just like they have this hilarious relationship where even though the sort of owner of the club is supposed to be like a sleazebag, you get the idea he's kind of like a sleazebag. He also like, there's like a lovable like pushover quality to him that like he actually, you get the sense that he actually on some level is not a bad dude. I know this is kind of a stock stereotype and there absolutely is this character in Showgirls, another movie I truly love, like genuinely love that movie. There's the like, you know, strip club owner who's just like, oh, this is a class joint. You know, it has that kind of like, I know I'm supposed to read this man as a total sleazebag. I know that's what we're going for here, but has those lines that are like, there's some care in this man, even if it's misplaced. Like, there's something there.
That's the thing. But that's what I liked about it too. Like, And I was torn on this, and I'm glad you touched on it. That's kind of like what I want to get into next.
Yeah,
because I feel like the comedy there helps in a way because we're used to seeing either like strippers being admonished, right? Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that was much more the case in the 90s. Now, obviously, we're living a more kind of a society that understands that sex work and is work and that strippers are doing literal work with their
it's an honest job. Like the way there's an early line, this is honest work. And
honest work.
You know that, I know that the judge doesn't know that, which is like a very good, like that's a very great line. Yeah.
So I like that so it's either that like admonish or poor them. Like this is a horribly degrading, terrible thing that only a person who has gone through horrible things in life had. Like that, only in that way you end up in this line of business and we'll pour them. Let's all feel very sorry. Yeah. And I feel like it's very delicate and complex. And I've never been a stripper. So I really apologize if I'm missing something or if I'm not really picking up on certain messages here. But like, as a general thing, I like that they put the humor there, especially with the sleazy guy. And in the sense that they do mention like the creepiness, like dealing with assholes, like guys being gross, especially in the scene where Demi Moore is talking to her daughter, who by the way is her real daughter in her real life.
Oh my God, it is?
Yeah, it's her real daughter.
That's incredible.
And, you know, when she's having that scene and she's talking about, dancing is fun, but like they're the guys. And it's so you do have a little bit of that, of like this is, of all the complicated realities of being in a job that really is catered toward the male gaze, basically. Yes. Really is about, you know, catering to a very specific kind of audience. So, of course, that's going to come with a lot of baggage and drawbacks. And it speaks a lot about the place of women in society. But at the same time, it shows them as people who have fun and who make jokes and who, you know, like, and
they're coworkers. Yeah.
They're coworkers cracking jokes and helping care for like a daughter, and they have like personalities. Like I thought that was very interesting. And at points of the movie, I was really kind of like torn about the use of humor. Like we said, I'm just going to call him T-1000 the entire time. He's a complete asshole. He has no redeeming qualities. And the way that they use humor with him a lot, in one way, I'm kind of like, oh, it takes a little bit of the seriousness out of this very serious situation. But on the other, I'm like, at the same time, like, it's pretty clear that he's fucking gross, that the judge is fucking gross, that basically every guy who isn't the police officer in this movie, and Chad, of course, that they're all really fucking gross. So that's what I wanted to ask you about, like, as a general thing. So I was surprised positively in many ways, considering what I expected from the movie. But what did you think about how the treatment of women was as a whole?
Yeah, I think I agree that it was much more positive than I thought it would be for like a Hollywood product in the 90s, you know, kind of thing. But it does undercut itself again, like in several points. Like there is a really good scene kind of early on where Aaron and the officer, who's like a detective, who's like, my God, this man could not be more Italian. He's like just the most Italian man who's ever lived, like hyper Italian. I don't know. I don't even know if the actor is. It's just like the mannerisms of this character, like super Italian, you know, detective dude in his little suit all the time. They have like a really honest moment where she's having a conversation with him, and he makes like a remark about like, oh, strip is this. And she's just like, excuse me, dancers, like, show me some respect, dude. Like, and it's like a genuine kind of moment of like, yeah, listen, this is a very intelligent person who is doing this job, and she has complicated feelings about it, which I do want to talk about as well, her feelings towards her job.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. She's the only one who actually puts it down in a very like...
Yeah. So she will defend herself against other people, but she also clearly feels a certain way about it. Like she says early on that she feels nauseated before getting on stage, and it's obviously because of the dudes. It's not because she doesn't like dancing or like her body, but she has a complicated relationship to it. And I actually had like, I had a really hard time in a good way. I don't think this was played poorly, but I had a really hard time with some of the later content that was about how she dealt with it with her daughter. Because the daughter does go to work with her a few times. Like, eventually, you know, again, this is a spoiler section, but she gets the daughter away from the shithole husband, at, like, just to protect her. And, you know, she has the other dancers kind of watch her in the background, but, you know, somebody can't watch her for a second, and she peeks out, and she does see... you know, mom stripping and, you know, like doing the little butt dance so she gets the money and stuff like that. So it's not just mom dancing. It's mom, like, you know, being touched by strangers and things like that, right? Which is, like, hard to contend with because I genuinely, as, like, a sex-positive person, am like, yeah, this is a job. This is awesome. Like, there's nothing wrong with this. But it is hard. Yeah. Like, the reality is hard that, a child should not see that. That's probably not a good, like, first look at sexuality for a child, like, at that age. Like, it's probably more of like a, let's have honest conversations about what happens, you know, your mom does this for a job and I like my job, but there are parts of it that might be hard, you know, like there's stuff that I completely realize would be tough to talk to a whatever 7 year old about, like about doing this job, doing this work. I think everybody could probably say there are difficult things about their job or things that make them feel a little icky about their job. Not necessarily everybody, but like a lot of people could say that. And so it doesn't mean, oh, it's different just because there's a sexuality aspect to it.
Yeah.
It's just that, okay, if I was 7 and I saw this, I might have a particular view of sexuality, right? That you might not necessarily want a child to have. So I genuinely like am wrestling with my own ass self watching this fucking stupid movie that I'm really enjoying and like think is very funny. But I'm like having some thoughts about this. Like, okay, like Danielle, be honest with yourself about, yes, you think this type of work is absolutely wonderful and great, and there's nothing wrong with it, but also understand the reality of this would be difficult to explain to a child. This would be difficult to show a child that you do this. And like, that's also okay. But I also felt a little bad when she doesn't want to do it anymore once the daughter sees it. And they do have a conversation. I think it's a really good scene, actually. Like, I think Erin, the character, is being pretty honest and pretty real, and she's a wonderful mother. But, like, she also, like, shames the job, right? Like, after the daughter sees it, she has this conversation with the detective about, like, I can't do this anymore.
And the detective is the guy who actually I thought, like, was very an interesting...
Yeah.
Unexpected counterpoint in the conversation is like, oh, like, he's the one being like, that's kind of not a big deal. Like,
he's like, you do what you gotta do. Like, you know, you're working your job. Like, he's like pretty not shitty about it. I guess maybe he learned his lesson from calling her like a whatever. I don't remember exactly what he calls her early on, but like,
he accuses her of like sleeping with
right. He like assumes that, you know, that she does other types of sex work basically just because she dances, and it's like, dude, you shouldn't make that assumption. Like, maybe some people do, and that's okay, but you don't make that assumption, of course.
Yeah.
And, like,
She was severely underestimated by him, like everyone else. That's kind of, like, the entire point, right? Even the super bad guy whose name I totally forgot right now. He's in a bunch of shit. The guy who's in CSI later.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, who's one of the
the most evil
henchman, I guess.
One of the evil person in this movie, probably.
Yeah, and he's having this conversation, and is like, "Oh, where the guy who likes to kill everybody's kind of like, should we kill her?" And he's like, "Well, like, I think she's just a dumb whore." And then the other guy's like, "For her own sake, I hope she is."
Right.
And then later he finds out, "Oh no, like she's not as dumb as she should be."
Super smart, and like,
yeah, and
the main that's driver,
the whole plot of it, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole thing of the movie, it's guys severely underestimating this woman because she's beautiful and she's a stripper. And it's like, do that at your own peril, jackasses.
Yeah, exactly. And like,
she's a genius.
Here's what I want for her. I want for her, if she wants to be an exotic dancer, if she wants to do that, I want her to do that forever and find a way to explain to her daughter, listen, there's all kinds of things about sex. There's a million things about sex. You're going to learn them as you grow up. I don't want you to watch me dance, but like, what I do is awesome. Like, I wish there was some way for the movie to like acknowledge that and be like, I don't want you to feel ashamed of me. What I do is fine. Like,
it's interesting because I was actually reading a little bit of, it was a news piece, and it was from the time, but it was kind of one of those, like, I don't know. I couldn't even tell which outlet it was from because it's one of those like kind of cached things that you get in Wikipedia. But it was like this little note, and she was talking about how and one of the questions, what it seemed like the interviewer had asked about her her actual daughter seeing her actually stripping in the movie.
Because
then there's that layer, right? She's not, it's her actual living daughter seeing her there. And then her answer was something like, we're not ashamed of our bodies in my family. And something like, I walk around naked all the, like, we don't care. Like, it's not a big deal for us. And I was like, that's a healthy way of going about it. Yeah. I think.
It absolutely is.
Get what you're saying, because I do think it's a super, whenever we talk about this kind of thing, it ends up being a more layered discussion.
Yes. Yeah.
But, and I was like you at some points, I felt like the need to jam in a joke was kind of like, oh, we could have been a little more sensitive there, couldn't
we? Yeah. 100%.
But on the other hand, I felt like he gave lightness to a situation that, like, the absurdity of the thing wasn't that she was a stripper. Like, fuck that. The absurdity of it is that she's stuck in a murder fucking mystery where people are dying around her, like, are stripping. It's just like a plot point. It's not what we're lamenting here. And I think that's really cool. It's like, no. And also, like, one other thing that was kind of like, she's naked a lot. Like, there are a lot of scenes. Like, 20 minutes of her just dancing around in like her room. What for? It serves no actual purpose. It really is just like, please let's feast our eyes on the hotness of Demi Moore. And I don't know how I feel about that. I guess if she's cool with it, like, I should be cool with it. It's her body. Like, whatever. Do you, Demi. But it really does point out, like, the kind of goal of the movie, which is like, oh, we're talking about these interesting things and we're trying to, like, treat women in a certain way. But also, like, I know you came here to see Demi Moore naked, so we're giving you that.
Right. This is such a fucking Hollywood-ass thing, right? Of, like, okay, you're making a point with your movie, and I think most of the time doing it well, but you're undercutting it when you occasionally do a joke that's, like, just a little below the belt, just like, all right. And or just being like, we got titties over here, got titties over here, got titties over here, got titties over here. We got titties in your face and titties in your space. Like, just, you know, sorry, I just made up a song.
Did you just make that up?
I just made that up. Paul, can we get, like, the techno remix on that? Like, just, you know, just in case we need something at some point in life. No, I mean,
I love it so much.
Listen, I'm queer. I think, you know, women's bodies are beautiful in all shapes and sizes, all kinds, basically everything. I'm never going to be like, oh, I don't want to look at this. This isn't a nice thing to look at. This is a beautiful thing to look at.
Yeah.
It's a little hard. Like, honest to God, I have fallen asleep in 2 strip clubs in my life. I have fallen all the way asleep. Like, all the way asleep. Because it's like a weird atmosphere. For me. At least for me. It feels like a weird atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little hard for me to take. Again, very, very completely sex positive. Think anybody should be able to do anything for work.
Yeah.
And anybody can have any kind of sex they want as long as it's consensual. I'm thrilled. I'm happy.
Yeah.
But it is, like, an atmosphere that does cater, as you said, like, very, very, very much to, like, hetero male gaze, right? And, like, pleasing, like, a hetero male, you know, type of thing. And, like, that's not always my thing. I'm not always super happy about that. So there's parts of that are hard for me to, like, fully, you know, appreciate or enjoy. Now, I'm also, like, I don't just want to sit here and be a weirdo about looking at Demi Moore either. Like, she is an incredibly, incredibly beautiful human being. Her body looks, you know, incredible in this movie. And you have it here in your notes, too, though, that, like,
it sounds like
she really, it was not easy to get into this kind of shape. And, like, that's another aspect of this, right? Where it's
that,
like,
right?
I want everybody's body to be healthy. I want everybody to feel good about themselves, to eat whatever they need to eat, to do whatever exercise they want to do. Like, I hate that there's this aspect to it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'd be able to fully just be like, listen, she's gorgeous. She's dancing on screen. She's naked. This is great. This is wonderful. If this is what she wants to do. But there's that part of that where it's like, oh, she had to get herself into this insane shape and, like, only eat. Again, this is, we're going to put content warning on top of all of this because there's a lot here. Like, but like, not eating enough and, like, punishing her body to look like this. And it's like, her body would have looked fucking amazing with 20 pounds of fat on it, too. Like, her body would have looked absolutely incredible because bodies are absolutely incredible. So, like, there's this part of it that's hard for me, too, to say, like, oh, this is just a good thing. You know what I mean? Of her just dancing naked. It's like,
it's very, and the look of it, it caters to a very late 90s aesthetic.
Yes.
And early, too. Like, of the quote-unquote healthy. And we see the pattern repeating forever, right? It just takes different, like, visual shapes in terms of the female body. But that you're looking at a person who the idea of health and really linked to the aerobics and, like, Jane Fonda videos and whatever was very much another example I can think of is Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies, or to a different extent Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, but she was very muscular for that one, so maybe a little
she was more MMA fighter looking
than anything else
these other ones. But that also, I'm sure, took a certain type of training and a certain type of regimen, like,
eating,
no joke,
exactly,
right?
This, like, is not like you're putting it as healthy, presenting it as healthy, because, like, Demi looks toned. She doesn't look completely, you know, depleted.
She doesn't look emaciated.
She doesn't look emaciated. Absolutely. Like, it's not like kind of that waif sort of thing that would come back later on or the early 2000s. Right. But at the same time, we know we know that's unrealistic for 99% of the population.
Yes.
It wasn't realistic for Demi herself. I was reading a little bit about, she published a book that I've never read, and they mention it sort of.
Yeah.
I was reading a few stories with her talking about her general struggles with body image. And yes, again, a little bit of a content warning here, because she talks about disordered eating and over-exercising. Yeah. And it was true for her for like previous roles in Decent Proposal, which is, by the way, one of my favorite 90s movies, as problematic that it is. And then for Striptease, she said, when I was making Striptease for breakfast, I would measure out a half cup of oatmeal and prepare it with water. Then for the rest of the day, I would only have only protein and some vegetables. Like only protein and vegetables. And that was it, she wrote. So like that's, and she talked about how in G.I. Jane, that she did, like she allowed herself to gain a little more, she bulked up a bit, and that after that she learned to have a more a healthier relationship with her body. But I'm kind of like you, I'm like, this is like, okay, this lady's gorgeous, like let's feast our eyes on the gorgeousness of Demi Moore, which we can't always because she's gorgeous, but like at the same time I'm like, we know that this isn't something that came easily and that isn't achievable for most people, and that probably wasn't achievable for her. And then I read it and I was like, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So it does have that like complicated layer. And then, yes, get $12.5 million for that shit.
Cause for that's real. Yes. Get paid. It was
the
not
least
easy.
You could do.
Yeah. Like as somebody who just like, I have to have a competition weight when I do grappling tournaments, and I don't have to do that much. Just knowing what I have to do, I'm like, get paid more. Everybody who ever has to do any of this, get paid more. Please get paid more. Like, fighters get paid more. All of it, just get paid more, you know?
Yeah, because this is really like something that takes a toll on your entire life. Like, it shouldn't be like this. Like you said, we shouldn't be looking at needing a female body to look a certain way for it to be worth $12.5 million, right?
Right, exactly.
But if you're putting yourself through all that freaking sacrifice, like milk that horny dude money, girl. Like,
exactly.
Do it.
And that's like we support you getting paid if this is your choice. But also, this shouldn't have to be anybody's only choice, like kind of deal, you know?
And imagine afterward, right? Like everybody knowing every, like almost every crevice of her body. That's a lot of exposition, especially for somebody who was already a really big ticket item at the time.
Yeah, like super famous, big, you know, a star at this point. After Ghost, a star, absolutely a star. So yeah, and it does tie into something that is like an absolute positive for me that I just have to, I don't know how you feel about this, but something I loved about this movie and didn't expect is just how awesome her music and choreography choices are. Holy shit. I was not expecting this to be the Annie Lennox show, but it is. And it's fantastic. You just get this sense of this character as this, like, she was probably kind of a nerd. She's like a hot nerd who's like,
she worked at the FBI before. Like
she worked in the FBI.
Kind of the thing.
She secretly always to have these moves. She always danced, of course. Maybe she even danced like, you know, like at a high level as an amateur or something. Like she's got moves. Like she has some kind of like either just, you know, for fun or that she had some kind of training. Like she has these like beautiful moves. These really fun routines. Like, there's also an aspect to this, which I realize I didn't mean to bring the queer to like the most hetero movie ever, but I can't help it. There is such a camp to stripping that, like, again, I know that sounds like the most fucking obvious thing in the universe, right? But I'm used to like drag shows. I'm used to like gender bending stuff. I'm used to like going and watching a lot of like, I watch a lot of like pole performances. I have close friends that I do jiu-jitsu with that also do pole.
My sister does pole dancing.
It's amazing.
I did it for like a month and I was extremely bad at it. I didn't pursue it. I feel like maybe if I had tried harder, because my sister is also very uncoordinated and she's now good at it. So maybe if I had persisted, but sorry, go ahead.
It takes a while. I mean, like anything, it's such a skill.
It's
like
really
one of my main training partners is like really good at pole and like loves pole. And I've seen her perform multiple times. And like, it's just so incredible. And like, again, for me, pole is not necessarily a queer thing, but it has so much overlap with things like drag and like gender bending shows and even things like burlesque that like, to me, it's such an inherently campy and even maybe like a little queer art form, right? Like yeah. you're doing a routine. You're not just like, I don't know, like it's not serious. I don't know how else to put it, but like there's a playfulness to it. There's a camp yes. quality to it. And especially if you're going with Annie Lennox and Prince, like this is so can't campy. If she weren't dancing for like very straight dudes, I'd be like, oh, wow, this is so much fun. Like that would be for me like, oh, this is so great. I love this.
They even mock it right on this thing. Like, yeah. One of the guys, I think it's the owner of the strip club, like they really like you despite your depressing music choices or something. and who among us hasn't thought like, oh, like I would strip to like this song, like
exactly. I'll strip to that song. We've all got our song, I feel like.
Yeah,
you know,
like I totally see what you're saying, and it's really cool. I really liked her choreographies, like I like the little outfits, yeah, like the whole thing.
Money Can't Buy It is one of my favorite songs. Like, I just love that song. I'll just shout out the video for that, like, the Annie Lennox song. It's, like, one of the most incredible, like, high-gloss, like, minimalist music videos you could ever look at. She's, like, running around as if she just got out of the shower with a towel on her head, just, like, dancing. It's fucking great. So just putting that one out there for the, you know, just in case you like that song.
I think it deserved an appreciation.
Just a like, shout.
Shout appreciation.
Shad deserves song all choice the appreciation.
and lastly, I think like one of the things that I really wanted to touch on was the fact that, and we kind of talked about it throughout, but that I do feel like it's the strong point of the movie and the reason why I feel like it still hasn't, like why I don't really understand the hate for it so much. I really, yeah. Sometimes I see a movie that is hated and I get why, like Showgirls. Like, you can understand because it's...
excuse me. Showgirls is a masterpiece.
I personally really enjoy it. I'm just saying that I can understand why people of very yeah. unrefined tastes
sure.
would reject it. As the
didn't mean to interrupt, sorry.
It is. No, we support your defense of Showgirls in this space. But I do feel like this movie is legitimately... funny. I don't know if it's just me and my very primitive sense of humor, because I do like really dumb shit sometimes, but I laughed out loud throughout because it's very weird. So I think like it's a weird movie, right? Like everything's a little strange. So yeah. You kind of had to get in on that. But once you're like, okay, I embrace whatever the fuck is happening here. Like I don't know what it is and I'm in it. It's kind of like probably like doing shrooms. Like if you don't embrace sure. it,
yeah.
If you fight it, you're going to have a terrible time. It's just yeah. going to be a horrible ride. But if you're just like, you know, this is happening. I'm just, kids don't do drugs. This is a hypothetical example. But if you're like in it, then it's different. And I feel like that. I think that is just a, I don't know, legitimately funny movie.
Yeah, I
don't know.
I agree with that. I didn't expect to laugh as much as I did. It's really fucking funny. Like, and it works. Also, I will say this right now, physical comedy is beautiful. I think it's fantastic. I think it's beautiful. I think it's fine to laugh at really stupid pratfalls, and this movie has plenty of them.
Oh, but Robert Patrick's so good at that.
Oh,
like,
my
all,
God.
Everything he does is amazing. Him taking morphine that was for the wolves.
The wolf
and then being
morphine?
Super with a golf club in his arm.
God, that is so good. Yeah, he has a golf club as like a splint for his arm for half the movie.
It's so good. And one of the other like we're talking about the song, even like little tiny tidbits, like they're reading the letter from the admirer who ends yeah. up getting killed, and then poor Jerry. He meant well. That guy was a very unfortunate victim.
Yeah,
he was just like,
well.
He was a very like low key creep. He was like, I can't call you Aaron and I worship you too much.
Yeah.
Asking that you would dance to like Kenny G's Christmas album.
Right.
Who thinks of that? Who comes up with that joke?
It's really good.
And an interesting little tidbit of information that you only get when you have a Mexican partner.
Sure, sure.
One of those little, the henchmen that were on the boat.
Yes.
That they start talking to Chad, and Chad talk about how Meryl Streep used to be a stripper called Chasté La France.
A bad wrist because he has to check out the boobs.
The boobs has tendonitis from checking the boobs. One of those guys is like apparently a soap opera guy, soap opera star who was recently in trouble because he attacked a reporter.
Oh no!
He punched a reporter. Yes, Eduardo Yanez. And I was like. Literally, we were watching it. And it's like, oh, isn't that I think that's a Mexican guy who punched the reporter once. I'm like, how do you even hold that kind of information in your head?
Oh, my God.
And lo and behold, it was. So that's...
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Honestly, so that makes me almost, like... He was really playing a part right there. He was playing a hell of a bit part as, like, impressed... henchman impressed with Shad's incredible bullshit, which is, oh my God. Yeah.
Quite which famous person used to strip there? Meryl Streep? You're saying Meryl Streep used to strip? Chasté La France. I don't know.
Chasté La France.
I'm not ashamed of how much I love the jokes in this movie, because I feel like not a single moment, and sometimes I feel I kind of see what you mean. Like, sometimes it undercuts the rest of the movie. Sometimes we could have gone without it. But I keep talking about Burt Reynolds'
leather duck and Vaseline. He is a gem in this movie. He's like an absolute perfect. Gem. Yeah. Yes.
And the scene with the Vaseline, it's not just him and Vaseline. He talks about how he can feel it under his toes squishing.
And he does like this really adorable little like very twinky walk as he does it. He's like, I can feel it between my toes. It's just, oh my God.
He doesn't understand why his like aide is like horrified by the situation. He's like, it's Vaseline. Like, it's
you've never covered yourself in Vaseline. He's a piece of shit because he's a horrible person who has people killed. But I really want him to just embrace, like, you've got your kinks, buddy. It's fine. You just need to stop with this family values shit. Get on FetLife. Go party in a consensual way where people are going to be very excited to have your Vaseline toes. Like, live your life, bud. Just stop being a piece of shit and live your life, you know?
That's isn't that the lesson for everyone, though? Stop being a piece of shit and live your life.
Yes. Don't
especially with
shame.
These conservative politicians. Like, we see through your bullshit, conservative politician people. We know you're into, like, kinky shit.
Yeah. And it's great.
We don't shame you for the kinky shit. We shame you for the shit you say in public.
Exactly. We shame you for being an asshole who judges other people. Now go have your fun in a consensual, appropriate manner. Like, come on. Listen, we can all learn from striptease. We can all learn the lessons of striptease, I feel like.
I feel like that's I would be okay with leaving it this segment with that lesson. But do you have anything else you really want to discuss?
No, I think we got to all of it. I'm very, very happy with our stripping it down section this week.
I am winking, as they say.
Yeah, there's a wink. There's a wink there.
Little eyebrow raise. Is the right? I can't lift my left. So imagine me doing that, stripping it down. Okay, so that is it for this segment. We have, exposed our. Okay, that was not supposed to be our Vaseline leathered beliefs. presented our points, made our cases, and now it's time for the. Final segment, the shelf life segment of the show, which I'll just give you a brief explanation since we're just trying out, we're just beginning this new format. As we explained early on, this is how it's going to work, right? We're going to present the movie in a spoiler-free way, discuss a little bit about, express our feelings, because we have a lot of feelings. We're very sensitive people. Yeah. And then we're going to decide rationally, objectively, whether this beautiful VHS tape should be placed in the main shelf, in the staff pick shelf, which we know is the premium spot, Not everybody gets that. If it's going to be up there in the middle, which is fine. It's inoffensive. We don't mind middle. Middle of the aisle movies have their value, have their place in time. We're not shaming them. Or if we're going to throw it in the dump, which by that, again, send it to recycling because we're cool people. If we're just going to light it on fire, if we're going to like tape over it with like a game or whatever, people tape over things, yeah. You know.
With like a football game.
Yes. The VHS technology is something our younger listeners might not be very familiar with.
It's true. But,
yes, you could tape over things, and that was a risky gamble you played.
Yeah, because you might get a little bit and piece of something else in there, and you know.
Yeah, it's been I at least in movies, it's been the start of many a family discussions. Somebody would think they were watching, going to watch a thing, and it was something else entirely. So, yeah. So we're deciding whether striptease, what kind of honor we're going to give it. So I don't know. I think it's clear my choice. So I'm gonna start now. I have seen it twice recently. So. I was afraid. I was like, the last time I watched it was a few months ago. We were in the throes of the pandemic. So I was kind of in like, I didn't know it was pandemic brain, if it was just being away from social interaction. But rewatching it yesterday for this show, I really, really loved it. I was very excited about it. I think it's really funny. I think it holds up. And honestly, if it wasn't, it's got like terrible ratings everywhere, like 13% Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I think 5-something% on IMDb. We're going to check on that and get back to you. It's at like 5.1 or something. No, not 5, like 51. I'm sorry. I should have made it.
Still pretty. Right. Yeah, no, it's still pretty.
Still pretty freaking low.
Yeah.
All of that considered, 4.5. Just checked. 4.5. So out of 10? All of this considered, out of 10.
Oh,
it's very low. Yeah. I am ready to put it on. Or a Steph Big Shelf. How about you?
All right. My gut feeling is that this is middle aisle material, but it's like the front of the middle aisle. This is like a classic, like a 7 out of 10 kind of deal. Like, I think it's very good. It is very high quality. It does undercut itself in some ways, and that brings it down just a little bit. For me, there's some complications there. I could be persuaded. I could be persuaded to put it on a staff pick shelf because I think it's pretty close. Like, if it's middle of the aisle, it's in the front of the middle of the aisle. If that makes sense. Like, not quite the middle, more towards the front. You know, if this is a spectrum,
it's a spectrum of the. We can. It's literally our show, and we can do whatever we want with it. So absolutely, we can have a front of the middle aisle. I will say this. I think it's not a movie that everybody will understand at first glance.
Yeah.
So I will compromise, and we can place it up front, middle aisle. And like maybe some months where like we promote it or like the weekend or something, like we do some special things like, oh, like get a Demi Moore special going or something like that.
Yeah.
And like, or maybe when our dear listeners come ask us for recommendations, I'll be like, you know what? I think you're cool. I like you. I've seen your taste. You rented some pretty cool shit. You like Indecent Proposal. So obviously you're a person of very sophisticated taste. So you go striptease. So I'm cool with settling for top placement in middle aisle with the occasional recommendation.
All right. That feels good to me. That feels really good to me. I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. I think we're off to a good start.
Hell yeah. Easy. We can do another one next week. That's so easy.
Well, I guess that settles it for today's discussion of Striptease, the opening act of our beautiful Jinxgiving month. We have a ton of good stuff coming up. I personally really love the theme because I feel like we can do a lot with it. And I'll just say that next week's pick, it's also very close to my heart. Being that I am absolutely obsessed with one Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels. And next week we are talking about Lionheart.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, I'm excited to watch this one.
Yeah, you haven't seen Lionheart, right?
I've never seen Lionheart. I won't spoil anything. I just know of it somewhat from something you've written. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, because I've written extensively about, I would say I'm one of the top Van Damme scholars.
I think it's true. Yeah. I think it's actually true, for real.
For better or worse, I am not just saying it. I
think for real. It's for better. It is for better. Absolutely.
And Lionheart is one of the, I think, it's not Bloodsport. It's not Kickboxer. It's not Hard Target. Like, it's one of the, it's not Time Cop. It's something that I feel like a lot of people might have not seen. So watch that before last week. And I can guarantee you fun. Honestly, if you embrace it, and if you're like, go into it with the mentality of, I'm just going to have fun. Dear listener, you're going to enjoy it. And then we'll decide in which shelf it goes. But not going to lie, I might already have an idea.
It might already be somewhere.
In my mind, in my mental shelf. But this is a democracy. We make decisions together here. Yeah. That is it for this week. Thank you all for listening. We hope you come back to our friendly neighborhood video store next week. Until then, we would love for you to join our movie club. Come by fanbyte.casa and join the You Love to See channel for news, updates, discussion, and special events. We want to hear from you, so come on by. We can also share with you, because it's been open, we have a You Love to See It channel in the Discord, and we're already like talking about some stuff there, already trashing some movies, you know, me exposing my terrible taste. It's a lot of fun. We want you to join us there and talk about your thoughts on the movies we discuss, on our discussion too. Give us recommendations. We're thinking about all these different things involving you, the listener, for the future. So it would be really cool if you joined us there and joined us in the conversation. You can follow us on Twitter at Fanbyte Media. You can follow Danielle. Where can they follow you, Danielle?
Oh, go on over to Twitter at Danielle RI. That's where I live.
I also kind of live on Twitter, which is a sad thing to say out loud, but it's true. And I'm there at Nanda Prates, NANDAPRATES _. And you can follow us on Instagram at Fanbyte, on TikTok at Fanbyte, and of course on fanbyte.com. And you can also watch our streams on twitch.tv/Fanbyte. I guess that covers it all. We will see you all again next week for Lionheart. And until then, you'll love to see it.